to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And I'm Jaden.
And this is going to be a short and sweet episode. We're just going to talk a little bit about San Diego Comic-Con. For those of you that follow the podcast, you'll notice that over the last week, I've put up a lot of interviews that I did with creators at San Diego Comic-Con. So if you're interested in learning about any of the books that those creators are working on, I highly suggest going and checking out those interviews. I think, without question, just about every interview is worth listening to. Got a lot of great insight into some of the characters they're working on and the upcoming projects they have. So, once again, I want to thank all those creators for taking some time to talk to me. It was a lot of fun. So, as always at Comic-Con, there's a lot of news that comes out.
We're sitting on top of the story of the century here.
And it's pretty much impossible for us to cover it all. So I think we're just going to hit some highlights. And if there's anything you're interested in learning more about, pretty much just put the topic, whatever it might be, you know, Fantastic Four movie, and then put SDCC. You Google that, and you're going to pretty much find all the news you need for any particular topic. So one thing I'll mention first before we get into some specifics is that every year after Comic-Con's over, if you go to news sites or you just Google, like, San Diego Comic-Con 2015 news, the majority of the articles are all about movies. It really kind of bothers me, to be honest with you. There's so much more to Comic-Con than just these massive movies, but you go to, like, USA Today, for example. They have an article that came out little over a week ago. Top 5 takeaways from San Diego Comic-Con. Every one of them is something to do with a movie. Star Wars, Batman vs. Superman, Fantastic Four, Hunger Games, and then their number 5 is Marvel Studios, who wasn't even there. That's in their top 5 news from San Diego. The fact that Marvel Studios wasn't even there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It just bothers me. There's so much more to Comic-Con than the movies and the TV shows. But I don't know, I guess they figure that's what people want to read about. So, I mean, it's that attitude that has the tickets selling out, you know, in record times. And it's that attitude that has the people that attend Comic-Con bitching and moaning when they can't get into Hall H. And, you know, the fact that, oh, there's nothing to do. I didn't even get to see Ben Affleck or whatever, you know. Like in the middle of the afternoon on, what was it, Saturday, when the DC booth was like literally packed.
Yeah, it was Saturday.
Yeah, like packed with people. Couldn't even walk around in there. All to see a trailer of Batman vs. Superman that was released online that morning that you could see better and hear better on your computer at home. So, I don't know. I guess I'm just a crotchety old man who's tired of the huge crowds and the people that care about nothing but movies and have never even read a comic. All right. On to some specific items of news. Top Cow officially launched their talent hunt. And they also kickstarted a new comic called September Morning, which Jaden is very much looking forward to.
Yeah, not really.
And that, you know, that Kickstarter funded in 2 days, right?
Yeah, I saw.
Yeah, and they're knocking the stretch goals down one by one. So for those of you not familiar with the Top Cow talent hunt, basically it's a chance for writers and artists who are interested in getting their work published. So basically you go to CBR, Comic Book Resources, and just do a search for Top Cow talent hunt, and you'll find the rules there. So I think you have to write basically a full script, but like 8 pages worth of script. If you're an artist, I think you have to submit 8 pages from a script that's there provided for you. And for the first time, they're actually providing feedback this time. So I think the deadline is like February or so. And then you get a little bit of, you get one paragraph worth of feedback, and you get to make changes to either your art or your writing, and then resubmit. And then the winners of the contest will actually have their work published in a Top Cow comic. So if you've always wanted to be a comic creator and you don't want to self-publish or show your work online, this is a great way to get some feedback and kind of find where you are in your skill set. So it's something that Matt Hawkins and Mark Silvestri believe in very much. I believe this is a third or fourth year they've done a talent hunt. So no excuses.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a cool thing that they do.
Yeah, I've thought about doing it myself. I've never pulled the trigger. I keep saying, I'll do it next year. I haven't yet. So I don't know. Maybe this year will be the year. Yeah. Also in some comic news, Vertigo, the DC imprint, announced they're launching 12 new titles ever since the kind of the driving force behind Vertigo left a few years ago, Karen Berger. We've seen fewer and fewer Vertigo titles, but I think it's something, a line and an imprint that DC is committed to, and they've really shown that with announcing these 12 new titles. And there's a lot of really known creators who, you know, have been in the industry for a while, or they've done some critically acclaimed work. So we've got Mike Allred, Simon Oliver, Scott Snyder, Raphael Albuquerque, Tom King, Lee Bermejo, Gilbert Hernandez, Gail Simone, Darwin Cook. So just kind of a who's who of comic creators, and there's a lot of cool titles, kind of something for everyone. There's a few titles that I'm certainly looking forward to. Unfollow by Rob Williams and Mike Dowling, the Tom King book, I believe it's Sheriff of Baghdad, sounds very interesting to me. So a lot of cool titles, and as I said, DC seems committed to keeping the Vertigo line around. And they put out some really groundbreaking work. I mean, Sandman's critically acclaimed. You know, it's been many years since that series ended. But also Lee Bermejo's current series, Suiciders, is a Vertigo title. And that's probably, it's definitely in my running for best title of the year. Really, really great book. So, again, if you want more information about that, just probably Google Vertigo. And you're probably gonna, it's probably going to pop up in the news section.
Definitely some good, cool-looking books here.
Yeah, and DC had a few other announcements. They announced that the finale to the trilogy from Frank Miller, his Dark Knight trilogy, is going to be coming out, and they announced Klaus Janson as the artist, but also that Frank Miller himself will be doing some of the art for the interiors. So that got that got some people's attention for sure. Also, Francis Manapul, it was announced that he is going to be working on a was it Aquaman Earth One?
Yep.
Title. So that had a lot of people excited. So personally, I feel that his art style will suit an underwater book quite well. Also, Andy Kubert is going to be joining, I forgot to mention that, is going to be joining Klaus Janson and Frank Miller on the Dark Knight 3 Master Race book. What other announcements were there, Jaden, do you remember from that DC panel?
I know that there's going to be a crossover between Batman 66 and Steed and Peele.
Right, the Avengers from the TV series.
Yeah.
Also, they announced that there's going to be three DC titles spinning out of Convergence that sort of use characters from the past, characters from other previous incarnations of the DC universe. So the Dan Jurgens Superman, where he's married to Lois, that's going to be a series. Titans Hunt, which they didn't really say too much what that was going to be about. But then also Telos, who is one of the main characters of Convergence, is going to be getting his own title. There was also a Superman American Alien from writer Max Landis announced, and Coming of the Superman by Neil Adams, which is going to take place in a pre-52 setting. They also had announced, actually this was before Comic-Con, a few days before Comic-Con, that There's a lot of older creators returning to DC for some miniseries. Marv Wolfman's going to be doing a Raven series, Jerry Conway on Firestorm. There's a Sugar and Spike miniseries. Len Wein's going to be doing something. So it's going to be cool to see a lot of those old creators, some of them working on, how can I say it, like the characters that they basically created. I mean, Marv Wolfman created Raven. Jerry Conway created Firestorm, so they're going to be working on some of those. And I believe Len Wein, I'm not sure if he created Swamp Thing, but he certainly was one of the people who worked on it early, and that's who the series he's going to be working on. And the Titans Hunt series, I think the only details they gave us about that were it's going to be the very first incarnation of the Titans back in the 60s, and that's what the series is going to focus on. So I think that was pretty much it for the major DC announcements. Oh, except for they did talk about the fact that the Milestone universe is going to be returning. And, I mean, we knew that for a while, Milestone 2.0, it's being called. What we didn't know is that it's going to be in partnership with DC, much as the first Milestone universe was. So if you're interested in any of those characters, Icon or Hardware, Static Shock, again, you can just Google Milestone SDCC and the news will probably come up. We also learned that Geoff Johns is going to be writing at least a one-shot for the new Milestone that returns. And I think Jim Lee said he was doing something for that as well. And I know nothing for sure. Nothing was announced. But when I did interview Gene Yang, who, of course, is currently writing Superman for DC, when I asked him about characters he'd love to work on, he mentioned the Milestone universe. So I'm thinking maybe he might have a title coming down the line for Milestone. Over at Marvel, you know, I'm not a huge Marvel fan. I didn't attend any of their panels. But I did hear a few things that were announced. I believe that there's a new Spider-Man title coming out. It's going to be called Spidey, specifically for all ages. It's going to focus on Peter Parker while he was in high school. So look for that to show up.
Yeah, I feel like this might kind of bring people back to the young Spider-Man that they're going to have in the movie. So maybe.
Yeah, that's possible, I suppose. I think mostly they just kind of want to have an entry point. It's been kind of a sticking point for some people recently that there's not a good entry point, in their opinion, for young readers
that's true.
At Marvel. So I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. But as I said, they did announce this this all-ages book, and it's going to be in continuity. So I know a few years ago, actually, I think it might have been in the mid-90s, they did an Untold Tales of Spider-Man series. And it had got a lot of critical acclaim. The stories were really good, but the sales were terrible. And what's interesting is part of the reason they did it is this is kind of when comics were getting up to like $2 a book, $2.25. And a lot of people were complaining about the price. So Marvel put out this Untold Tales of Spider-Man, and it wasn't on the newer paper with the really bright colors and everything. It was, you know, it looked much more like the old comics from back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, kind of drab paper and muted colors. So Marvel did this, and they sold it for only 99 cents. So it was like half or even less of the price of a regular book. And it actually hurt the title because people looked at it and they thought, well, that's only 99 cents. It must not be any good. You know, it's kind of,
yeah,
kind of interesting that that's the way it was looked at. It was substandard because everything else costs more. So the series didn't really do that well, but I've never read it myself, but I believe a lot of the issues were written by Peter David, and supposedly they're really, really good. I may have to go back and read them someday. Some other news from Marvel. They had a big panel about their Inhumans and Mutants, with the creative teams from those books. Again, it sure seems like Marvel is kind of shoving mutants on the back burner, so to speak. I think they're not going to be on Earth, and they're trying to promote the Inhumans as a replacement for the mutants. Again, this, you know, I don't read much Marvel, so it doesn't affect me that much, but it does bother me a little bit that this is kind of being forced upon readers of the Marvel Universe, just because, again, the movies, Marvel doesn't own the rights to X-Men, so they don't want to do anything to promote. I think they're hoping that, much like Sony's Spider-Man movie started to tank and they were able to get at least the partial rights back to Spider-Man, that's the same thing that'll happen over at Fox with the X-Men movies, but they seem to still be going strong. I mean, they've had a few missteps. I heard that, was it Wolverine that wasn't very good?
Yeah, the solo Wolverine movie, I don't think it was really received very well.
Yeah, and then the Wolverine Origins did better. And of course, X3, X-Men United or whatever it was also not done very well, but X-Men First Class was received very well. X-Men Days of Future Past, it did extremely well. And we've already seen some stills of X-Men Apocalypse, so I don't know that Marvel's going to be getting the X-Men back anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't know. The movie soon is still be holding strong.
Yeah, so, you know, who knows how long the license has before it expires. So, but in the meantime, Marvel's just doing, you know, they're not promoting their mutant stuff. I mean, they've even got a new character as Wolverine. So you can go and you can read the articles for yourself. Again, Google X-Men SDCC or Inhumans SDCC, and you can find the specific information. Seems like they're doing some interesting things, but again, I just feel like organically over time, the X-Men became popular and the Inhumans did not. So now that Marvel seems to be kind of trying to flip-flop their prominence in the Marvel Universe, this hasn't happened organically, and it just, I don't know, to me it just doesn't necessarily make sense. I honestly, you know, I'm a big fan of a lot of secondary characters. You know, I get tired of seeing the same old thing, Wolverine, Deadpool. But that being said, I'm not really a fan of the Inhumans. They just don't interest me. You know, I've read plenty of Inhuman stories. I don't know, as characters, I just find them to be boring. Maybe in the hands of a good writer like Charles Soule, they'll turn that around. But the combination of having it shoved down my throat and them being characters I'm not really interested in, I'm not looking forward to any of the Inhumans titles that are coming out. Other Marvel news, you know, not really anything big or groundbreaking. Maybe a little more information came out about some of the titles we can expect, like the all-new Hulk, or I'm trying to remember exactly what the name of the book. It's like, I want to say all-new Terrific Hulk, but I know that's not it. Let me see if I can find it really fast. That title's going to be drawn by Frank Cho, written by Greg Pak. Here it is. Totally Awesome Hulk is what it's going to be called. So, I'll probably check that out. I am a fan of Greg Pak, and I was really enjoying the previous incarnation of the Hulk, as I've said many times, that was being written by Jerry Dugan. Very sad to see that end, so that's probably one of the few titles I'll be checking out. And I'll of course try the new Daredevil. I sat down with Charles Soule at San Diego and talked to him about the upcoming Daredevil title. Probably, in a way, one of the least big surprises that's ever been announced by a comic company. You know, Charles Soule, he's a lawyer. You know, he's got his own law firm. And he wrote a She-Hulk series. So as soon as it was announced that Mark Waid and Chris Samnee were ending their run on Daredevil, I think pretty much everybody was like, oh, Charles Soule. And then it did, in fact, come to pass. So not a surprise. But as I said, he's a really cool writer. He's got some great ideas for the book. They're planning on moving Daredevil back to New York. The book's going to take a darker tone. He's going to have a new sort of sidekick kind of person. And the reason I say sort of sidekick is because it's not going to be like Daredevil tells this guy what to do and he does it. He's much more kind of independent And Daredevil's just trying to take him under his wing and show him the ropes, so to speak. So there's that to look forward to. And then another thing that was announced was Vader Down, which is a 6-issue crossover written by Kieran Gillen and Jason Aaron, with art by Salvador La Roca and Mike Diodato. And it's been described as basically Vader against by himself against a rebel army. So could be interesting. I did try out a lot of the Marvel Star Wars stuff when it first came out and found it to be fairly good. I do still find it strange that all the books, as far as where they're set in the Star Wars continuity, are between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. In a way, it feels like it kind of limits what you can do because you know where the story's going to go eventually. But I'm sure it'll sell well. It's going to have some amazing painted covers by Mark Brooks, so I'm sure all you Star Wars fans out there are highly anticipating that. Can you think of any other Marvel news, Jaden?
No, not really. I mean, you hit most of the big points. I mean, the main thing I'm excited about is seeing Charles Soule on Daredevil. It'll be definitely interesting seeing his legal take on it, and especially because he said that it would be different than his legal take on She-Hulk.
Yeah, and there was also a Chewbacca limited series announced. It's going to be written by Jerry Dugan and Phil Noto. And then wasn't there some animation news?
I'm trying to think.
I thought I heard something about the next season of the Avengers animated cartoon.
I don't remember really hearing anything about that.
I think Ms. Marvel, Black Panther, and the Inhumans are all supposed to make an appearance in the next season of Avengers. I think.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
I think it's being called Avengers...
Ultron Revolution.
There you go. That's it. So, I don't keep up with Marvel Comics, let alone their cartoons. It's just too much. Can't keep up with everything these days. You know, back when I was a kid, there wasn't enough comics and enough other media, comics and other media. I craved more, and now it's too much to even keep up with. It would be a more than full-time job, but for those of you that are Marvel fans, you'll have that to look forward to. Once again, I find it interesting that the Inhumans are showing up in another media. You know, we've seen them on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and now they're coming to Marvel Animation, so certainly seems like Marvel's doing whatever they can to replace the X-Men with Inhumans.
Yeah.
The Avengers. That's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team. Earth's Mightiest Heroes type thing.
Yes.
Let's do a head count here. Your brother, the demigod. A super soldier, a living legend who kind of lives up to the legend. A man with breathtaking anger management issues. Couple of master assassins, and you, big fella, you've managed to piss off every single one of them.
All right, movie news. There were definitely plenty of movie news that came out of San Diego. Jaden, what do you got for us?
Well, Warcraft had a panel in Hall H, and there was a ton of people lined up for that, as you would probably guess, considering that Blizzard has some of the most diehard fans out there. But sadly, we weren't released a official trailer. I've heard that there was a somewhat put together trailer of just some teaser stuff at the hall, but it didn't leak like a lot of other stuff did.
Did you watch that?
No, I mean I've seen some of the preview art for it, and it looks really good, but it didn't leak, so there wasn't any, like, for Suicide Squad, there was a phone video. For Deadpool, I'm pretty sure there's a phone video, and nobody even tried to record this one, or if they did, they didn't put it online.
Yeah, let's take a second and talk about the leaked stuff. There's kind of been, I guess you'd say, an honorary agreement between fans at Comic-Con and these studios. You know, they show this footage. Oftentimes, it's not the final footage. I know for a fact that the Deadpool footage that was released, it didn't have the special effects added in. So it's kind of rough, and the studios certainly don't want it out there. And as I said, there's kind of always been this acknowledgement of an agreement by the fans that they won't leak it. And in return, the studios will come and they'll give these sneak peeks of this, you know, footage that's more, you know, kind of like raw footage. Well, this year, both the Suicide Squad footage, like you mentioned, and the Deadpool footage leaked. And there is some talk that maybe studios in the future may not be willing to show this sneak peek stuff. So, you know, it's unfortunate that a few bad apples can kind of ruin it for everybody. You know, it's clearly stated. They say it before the panel starts. It's on signs everywhere throughout the convention. Whenever you go in a panel room, you can't record anything on the screen. You can't take a picture of anything on the screen. And I mean, Hall H is big, 6,000 people. You know, I'm sure they could use more security to kind of try to keep people from recording. But I mean, with smartphones and Google glasses and, you know, everybody.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard to stop.
Yeah.
The three people out of 6,000 that are going to be trying to record it.
I mean, do you think that it should be? I'm okay. Let's like take for instance what Warner Brothers did with Batman versus Superman. They only showed, you know, they debuted a new trailer, but it actually came out online that morning, so it was actually out before the panel even started. And then they showed it, you know, at the panel. I'm sure most of the people that were in Hall H for the Warner Brothers things didn't even realize that it had already been out that morning.
Yeah.
So you think maybe studios should just, you know, do that, have something that's finished and they're completely prepared to have it released for the wider public?
Well, I think the biggest argument here is that these people, these 6,000 people that have waited in line for days for the most part, are supposed to be getting something special and getting something by themselves. But I mean, it's still only 6,000 people when they have millions and millions of fans. I still think that they should release these trailers. So maybe release it the day of, after, so then they still get to see the first thing. But I mean, those people aren't standing in line for the trailers for the most part. I think most of them are standing in line so they can see these actors, and which they do. They're the small chunk of people that go to Comic-Con that get to go see those actors. That, I mean, 6,000 out of 100, what, 20,000, something like that,
yeah,
that go to Comic-Con.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think a lot of them, it's just as important for them to see this exclusive footage that isn't released, you know, sometimes ever in any other place. You know, certainly the Deadpool stuff did eventually get officially released online, but I don't think the Suicide Squad stuff didn't.
Well, actually, I think you have a flip-flop. The Deadpool, they the only thing you can find online right now is the phone
version. Okay.
Because they're releasing it in 2 weeks. All of the effects and stuff.
Right, okay.
And the Suicide Squad, I think they launched it the next day.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with you. I mean, not that I ever would stand in line for a day and a half or whatever to get into Hall H the way some people do, but I you know, I totally agree with you. If I've waited in line all this time, I want to see something exclusive that nobody else is going to see until, like, the movie comes out or, you know, many months down the line or whatever. So, yeah, there are rules, and if you don't follow the rules, you know, ban for life. You know, maybe they need to get a little, a little more active with their ban hammer. Because we both saw plenty of people at Comic-Con doing things that were expressly prohibited, like using selfie sticks. I mean, they don't just have these rules because they're trying to be jerks and inconvenience people. But I don't know. It just, a lot of the people that go just seem so ungrateful, you know, like they're there and they feel like, I spent this money and I'm owed something. Comic-Con doesn't owe you anything. If you don't want to spend the money, you complain about how expensive it is, and don't go. Believe me, there's somebody who'll be more than happy to take your spot. So, you know, these people that go and expect to be given free t-shirts and free comics and whatever, and, you know, they think the rules are there just to inconvenience them. No. It's there to keep the convention going, keep the convention popular, so the fans can have a good experience, so that everyone can have a good experience. You know, the studios are under no obligation to show any footage whatsoever. So if you manage to make it into Hall H and you're, you know, disobey the rules and you put the footage up online and then there's no more footage, then what? You've only ruined it for yourself and ruined it for everybody else, so. Anyway, let me get off my soapbox and, what other movie news do you have for us, Jaden?
Well, Ant-Man opened this weekend and it opened pretty strong, actually. I mean, compared to other, Marvel movies, it wasn't the best, but $58 million is still nothing to scoff at.
Yeah, I actually read an article that said something about every time one of these movies takes in less money than they expected. I think Ant-Man was predicted like $60 million, and as you said, it took in $58 million. The first thing all these people start saying, oh, it's superhero fatigue. The trend is over. We're not going to see any more superhero movies. They're all going to flop. You know, it took in $58 million. You know, that's nothing to sneeze at, like you said. And just because it didn't hit the 60, whatever. From everything I've heard, it's a quality movie. Probably one of the first Marvel movies in a while that I really actually want to go see. So, superhero movies are here to stay. You can't just say because one had a little bit of a soft opening that they're all going to fail. Because they're not all the same. You know, they're using superheroes as characters. Yes, they have that in common, but some are more dark. Some tend to be more comedic. Some are ensemble pieces. Some are focused on a singular character. So you can't really say that they're all going to fail. You know, they're different enough that even saying the superhero movie genre, there's so many different subsections of it. That maybe if one particular type isn't doing as well, like movies that tend to be more dark, you know, then people go see Guardians of the Galaxy, they go see Ant-Man, they go see, you know, other things. So I don't think that they're going to be going away anytime soon.
And I feel like Ant-Man might have a little bit of staying power, somewhat similar to Guardians of the Galaxy, kind of word of mouth type of thing. I think it'll still do pretty well in the weekends to come.
Yeah. So you said that the Deadpool had a phone video online. Have you watched it?
No, it doesn't have the special effects, and they announced that they would release that same trailer with those special effects in 2 weeks when it leaked online. So I think I decided to wait on that one, but I did see the Batman vs. Superman and the Suicide Squad trailers.
Okay, what'd you think of the Suicide Squad?
The Suicide Squad trailer actually got me really, really excited. It looks really good. I like the take on the Joker. Definitely looks good. And I like Margot Robbie as Harley. Looks actually pretty good. And also, I didn't seem to be focusing as much on Will Smith as Deadshot as I thought it would.
Did you, from seeing the first images, we saw the Joker with the damage tattooed across his forehead and the silver teeth, whatever. I saw that. I didn't care for it with all the tats or whatever. Did you have an opinion one way or the other when we first saw that image?
Well, I kind of like the idea of a darker Joker. I mean, I liked Heath Ledger's darker Joker. I mean, it wasn't the best. I don't think it's as good as a lot of people say, but that's neither here nor there. But I definitely think that it's going to be an interesting take on him. I like the diversity that you can do with the Joker, and I think this will be an interesting look at him.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, he's definitely one of the iconic villains, iconic characters in fiction, really. There are a lot of different directions you can go. I mean, it does make sense in my head that, you know, this guy's crazy. He is, you know, quote-unquote damaged, so wouldn't, you know, be surprising to see him all tatted up or whatever. So, I don't know. I'm trying to keep an open mind, but the thing is, I feel like I've never seen the Joker portrayed in any other medium other than comics in what I would consider a classic way. I didn't care that much for Heath Ledger's Joker. I don't know, I find it hard to describe. He just felt dirty to me rather than insane, I guess you'd say. It just felt just dirty. That's all I can really say, I mean, kind of perverted in a way, but not maniacal or crazy in the way that I, you know, think of the Joker. And of course, Jack Nicholson's take was much more of just a kind of a gangster crime boss style, almost like a Kingpin style Joker. So, for me, I'm still waiting for, and I couldn't even describe what would be the classic Joker. I'd have a hard time. I'd have to sit down and really think about it. I just feel like when I see it on the big screen or the small screen, whatever happens, maybe I'll see it and I'll be like, yeah, okay, that's it. That's the Joker. Maybe Mark Hamill's portrayal of him in the Batman animated series came the closest, but of course that had some of the edge of the Joker taken off because, you know, it was a cartoon for kids at the end of the day. So, you said you also watched the Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. You know, I did see some parts of it just from being in the DC booth over the weekend so much, but I've really kind of tried to stay away from watching the trailers for the DC movies just because, a couple reasons. I don't want to form an... I'm trying not to form an opinion, I should say, ahead of time, so the less footage I see, the better. And also the fact that Zack Snyder and David Goyer are still involved, and the way I felt they royally screwed up the first Superman movie, Man of Steel, doesn't leave me with much hope, so... I'm trying to go into it with as open a mind as I can. So for that reason, I'm trying not to watch, really pay any attention to any trailers or footage or pictures or what have you. So, but I know you have some pretty strong opinions about it.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest thing with the first movie wasn't so much. I mean, Superman killed Zod. I didn't feel like that was true to the character, but whatever. And I always thought that the Kents were probably the most important part of Superman's mythos, because if he wasn't raised by these parents, by these perfect parents, then he wouldn't become Superman. I mean, that's any Kryptonian would have come to Earth and gotten the powers, but he was the one who was raised by the great parents and were so morally perfect in like pretty much every way. And again, in this trailer, we have his mom telling him that he doesn't owe anybody anything. One, I don't think that Superman does what he does because he owes people something. He does it because he does to help people. And I didn't think that that was in character at all from Ma Kent. But whatever. At least the one thing that I can take away from this trailer that I think will make it a little bit better is at least it'll make up for the big destruction that they had in that last movie, because it seems like he will be atoning for all of those sins in this movie.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd call them perfect, but they certainly always strived to do the right thing, and you know, they instilled that in Clark.
Yeah.
You know, they made mistakes, they were human, you know, but they had a very strong moral compass. You know, they felt that, you know, Clark had these powers and he owed it to the world, you know, to help, because he could do things nobody else had. And, you know, like you said in the trailer, she uses the exact word I just used, but the other way, you don't owe the world anything. So yeah, very much out of character.
Yeah.
I agree. So, you know, I guess we'll see. I've also heard a lot of negative talk about the Lex Luthor with the long hair. I mean, as soon as they announced Jesse Eisenberg as Luthor, I thought it was terrible casting. I haven't seen or heard anything to make me change my mind. I mean, I don't care for him as an actor. I don't think he's a very good actor. I think he's very wooden. And, I don't think he could play any sort of Lex Luthor other than like a sniveling sycophant, really. I just have zero hope for him to be, worthy of being Lex Luthor. I mean, Lex Luthor should be intimidating, and he should have a presence on the screen, and Eisenberg has none of that, so whatever. More bad choices by Snyder and Goyer.
I just think it's interesting that people are mad about the fact that he has the long hair, but there was preview pictures of him being bald, so I'm pretty sure that he's going to be bald in this movie. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he starts off long hair and goes bald, or who knows.
Maybe he's probably, my guess would be he's probably going to be around kryptonite too much, and it'll make his hair start falling out or something along those lines.
Yeah. Well, I guess the biggest movie news, well, probably as big. I certainly heard a lot of Superman, Batman talk, but Star Wars. Mark Hamill was there. Carrie Fisher was there. Harrison Ford was there. Yeah.
Even after his plane crash, and apparently he was looking good, wasn't even limping.
So, yeah, a lot of people. As Jade and I have both said, a lot of people looking forward to this movie. We both expect it to be the highest grossing movie of all time when everything is said and done. So they showed some new, never-before-seen, behind-the-scenes footage, right?
Yeah.
I believe we saw Simon Pegg, who denied for months and months that he was in the Star Wars movie in sort of an alien costume. And we saw some scenes of Carrie Fisher looking very unregal-like. So, as I said, a lot of people anticipating this movie, and it seems like everybody involved really is passionate about the project. I mean, seeing these characters played by the same actors being brought back onto the big screen, I think a lot of people are going to be just over the moon.
Yeah.
J.J. Abrams, you know, he's done some really great things. So, again, expect it to be successful. We saw in that never-before-seen footage, we saw some footage of the new style TIE fighter, which is red and black. It's like has crashed. Looks like maybe on Tatooine. And, in fact, there was an exclusive at the Hasbro booth of that TIE fighter, the red and black. And then, of course, a lot of the new characters, new actors saying in the footage how daunting it is to join this beloved franchise. So, did you watch the footage?
I watched some of it. I mean, who's not looking forward to this movie? I mean, anybody who likes sci-fi at all is probably definitely going to be running to this movie when it comes out. And yeah, I mean, it's all just nostalgia. It's the original trilogy. I mean, it's the one that's going to succeed. It is probably going to be the last movie with the original cast in it, and they pass in the torch.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. The three prequels that Lucas made just weren't really very good. The Phantom Menace probably being the worst of the three, and even those movies just raked in the money because you know, they were the first new Star Wars movies. But like you said, they didn't have any of the original characters. I mean, granted, they're looking pretty old these days, but it's still Han Solo and Chewbacca, Luke Skywalker, C-3PO, R2-D2, Princess Leia. So, yeah, I'm not the world's biggest Star Wars fan by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm looking forward to seeing it. And more so now that I watched this little 3-minute video. And saw some of the scenes, because I, much like with Batman versus Superman, I haven't watched any of the trailers, just because, again, I these days I tend to want to be more surprised, and so I try not to watch too many things. But I did check it out, mostly because I wanted to see what Simon Pegg looked like in the alien costume. But he's only in there for a couple seconds, and he doesn't even have the headpiece on or whatever. So, but yeah, it seems, as I said, the from watching the video, the one thing that I really took away from it was how passionate everybody who's involved is to be returning to this world.
Yeah, it definitely seems like they're handling it with a lot of care. I mean, as much as Disney is a giant company with Marvel and all of their IPs and stuff, I mean, they have been doing good stuff with them, and I really am happy with the way that this Star Wars movie seems to be coming out.
Seems like my name. It's my name.
Sorry, go ahead.
I said it seems like a lot of people don't want to mess up.
Yeah, for sure.
My name is Oliver Queen.
I'm going to train you. Use it.
There are other ways to see.
Kingston are left behind.
My name is Barry Allen, and I am the fastest man alive.
Malcolm Merlin. You have failed this city.
All right, TV news. There wasn't a whole heck of a lot of TV news to come out of San Diego, at least nothing that I felt was ground-shaking. But I know there was some news about Arrow, and I know you're a big fan.
Yeah, that he's getting a Arrow's getting a new costume, which is going to be a lot more Green Arrow-like, and it seems as though they're going to be a little bit of different characters when they come back. I mean, Oliver and Felicity are going to be gone for 5 months, just hanging out in the country, I guess, taking a vacation from whatever, but it sounds like they're not going to be, that one of them isn't having a good time. I'm guessing it probably is Oliver, probably feels cooped up and wants to go out back out and fight some crime. But also, Diggle is supposedly getting, if not a costume, at least a mask, because to protect his identity now that he has a family. And it sounds like him and Speedy and Black Canary are all going to be working a lot more together in this season.
Yeah, and then did we hear any news about the Legends of Tomorrow series? Didn't really hear anything. I mean,
not much.
That we didn't already know, I mean, right?
The only thing that I learned about recently that I didn't know about is that they they're probably just going to use a CGI face for Firestorm. I don't know if they're going to find somebody who's going to match up with Victor Stein, or that's his name, right?
Martin.
And Martin Stein. Martin
Victor
Stein.
Victor Garber's the actor.
Yeah. And I don't think that they're going to find anybody to team up with him, because it doesn't look like another actor that much. It looks a lot like just a character that they designed in CGI.
All right. What about, there was some Game of Thrones news, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of controversy recently with Game of Thrones and Jon Snow, and spoiler alert, if you don't want to know anything about Game of Thrones, you should probably skip ahead about 15 seconds. But the thing with Jon Snow is that he supposedly died at the end of the last season, and there's a bunch of rumors around that he's not actually dead, that they've seen him around the place that they've been filming, and that he actually has his full beard and his hair. And the fact that he wasn't at Comic-Con this year was a pretty big controversy, considering it was his last year that he was supposedly on the show. But I doubt that that's actually true.
Yeah, and then isn't the show about to, like, pass?
It kind of passed the books on some certain storylines in this last season. And there are certain storylines that they haven't quite passed the books. But for the most part, it is pretty much past the books now, and George R. R. Martin actually, I think, is taking this series in a different direction than the books, I think.
I wonder if he's going to keep writing the books, or if he's just going to, you know, work on the show. It's probably a lot faster to tell the story through the show at this point than to sit down and write, you know, it takes forever to write a novel.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's still a ton of his fans who read the novels, and his next novel, I think, is coming out either the end of this year or beginning of next year, supposedly. So, I mean, I think that there's probably one or two more novels that left of that he's going to write, and I think there's only one or two more seasons that are going... No, I think there's going to be two more seasons of Game of Thrones, and that's going to be it.
Well, with all the news that came out of San Diego, didn't really have any rumors, nothing that really popped up or that I noticed. I mean, there are some small rumors here or there, TV, movie stuff, but nothing that I really felt was worth talking about.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
So that means it's time for quiz. And I know, Jaden, you recently finished reading Mark Waid's Irredeemable.
Yep.
So let's see how close of attention you paid. I feel like one of these is for sure easy. One of them maybe a little medium to hard, and then another one probably kind of hard. So we'll see. But we do have the multiple choice if you need the help. So,
all right.
Question one. What is the name of the lab where the tragedy began that was the turning point for the Plutonian?
All right, I'm going to need some multiple choice on this one.
Okay. A, protonic. B, I should say A, protonic lab. B, star lab. C, superior lab. D, Saturn lab. Or E, ultra lab.
All right, I think it was the protonic lab because that one's ringing a bell in my head.
Ding, ding, ding. You got it. Protonic. Protonic was the name of the lab. Okay. Question two. This, I feel, is probably the easiest one. Plutonian secret identity.
I know it, but you got to tell me.
You'll know it when you hear choice. It. Okay. Yeah. A, Sam Jones. B, Dave Jackson. C, Dan Hartigan. D, John Luther. Or E, Stephen Waits.
I'm going to go with C.
Dan Hartigan?
Yeah.
That's your answer?
Yes.
Ding, 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 ding. 2 for 2. Can he make it a clean sweep? Okay. The last issue, Plutonian is redeemed in a way, let's say. And it has to do with kind of something very meta that Mark Waid does. And this redemption kind of takes the form of two young boys. So the question is, what city do those boys live in?
Oh, man.
See, if you were a little more up on your comic history, this would be really easy.
Can I have the multiple choice?
Okay. A, New York. B, Chicago. C, Atlanta. D, St. Louis. Or E, Cleveland.
My gut's telling me Chicago, so I'm going to go Chicago.
Oh, you had a chance to go 3 for 3. It's Cleveland. It's Cleveland. In real life, those two guys, that's where they grew up.
Yeah.
So if you had, you know, if you knew the history, you would have got that. That's still pretty good. 2 out of 3. 2 out of 3, yeah. Ain't bad.
Please do note, this is no ordinary comic book. It is in perma-mint condition. If you spill soda on it, the drops fly off harmlessly onto lesser comic.
All right, top of the stack. This week, I'm going to be talking a little bit about Sinestro, currently written by Cullen Bunn. Actually, he's been the writer on the title since issue 1, and the artist is Brad Walker. He came on with issue 9, I believe. I had a chance to sit down in San Diego and talk with these two guys. They're very passionate about the book. Go and listen to the interview. We get really in-depth into who Sinestro is. Is he a hero? Is he a villain? What his motivations are? And I feel like both Cullen and Brad have a very good understanding of who Sinestro is in his own eyes and who Sinestro is in the eyes of the rest of the DC Universe. Also, with what's gone on in the other Green Lantern books, you may not be aware of this, but the Green Lantern Corps as a whole has kind of disappeared from the DC Universe proper. They're in this other universe dimension, whatever. All that's taking place in the Green Lantern Lost Army book, also written by Cullen Bunn. So there's an opportunity for Sinestro and his Sinestro Corps, or Yellow Lantern Corps, whatever you want to call it, to kind of step up and take the place of the Green Lantern Corps as the police force in the galaxy. And the ramifications of that, you know, what happens if the Sinestro Corps kind of takes over as the police force, the peacekeepers of the galaxy, and they do a better job of it than the Green Lantern Corps does. Again, does that mean that Sinestro's a hero? Does it mean that he is better than the Green Lanterns, that his methods are better? You know, do the ends justify the means, and so on and so forth? So Sinestro's always been one of my favorite villains. Not so much back in the Silver Age when he was more of the maniacal, twirl-your-mustache kind of villain, but ever since probably the late 70s through the 80s and 90s, and certainly with Geoff Johns' run on the Green Lantern family of books, he definitely became much more of a planner. In fact, Cullen Bunn called him the hero. You know, he may not be a hero in and of himself, but he certainly is the hero of analytical thinkers everywhere. Because this guy's got plans within plans within plans, and he analyzes everything and sees situations from all different angles so that he can accomplish his goals. So it's a great book. The characterization is just spot on, and it definitely raises a lot of philosophical questions about doing the wrong thing but for the right reasons sometimes. And as far as Brad Walker's art goes, I was a big fan of his art on Green Lantern New Guardians. And so when that book was announced as ending, I was kind of sad that I wasn't going to have my monthly Brad Walker fix. But then I heard he was announced as a new artist on Sinestro. So I was really happy about that. He does a great job of keeping things fresh, interesting layouts within the panels, great storytelling from panel to panel. And, you know, he still works very traditionally with, you know, paper and pencil. So, I feel it gives, a little bit of an, more of an organic feel than you see in a lot of comics these days, where things, are mostly done digitally and it comes across as a little stiff. Sometimes the art seems to suffer because what will happen is, because the art is done digitally, they go straight from illustrating it digitally to applying the colors. They skip that step of the inker.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I feel that sometimes, depending on the artist and who's doing the coloring, that sometimes the art loses some detail. Sometimes it looks a little generic or cartoony. That's certainly not the case here with Sinestro. So it's a really great book. I certainly recommend getting out there and picking it up. How about you, Jaden? What do you got for top of the stack?
I've been reading a lot of Flash with Lance Manapul and Brian Buccioletto's run. I read through the Guerrilla Warfare and the Reverse storylines. And man, if you haven't read this, their run on Flash, it's amazing. I mean, I love their Reverse Flash take, and the costume is just awesome, and all the stuff that they're doing with the Speed Force and Francis and Butch's art just fits the book so well, and you could just tell that there's such a good back and forth in between them.
Yeah, I feel like Flash has probably been one of the most consistently good books since the New 52 started, and not coincidentally, it's basically only had it's on, what, issue like 42, I think, is about to come out. And it's basically had two creative teams in all that time. A lot of the other books have undergone several creative teams, so I feel like that affects it as well. I mean, obviously, there are a few exceptions, like Batman. Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo have been on that since the beginning and continue to do great work. So, but yeah, the Francis Manapul, Brian Buccioletto run is definitely classic stuff, and I feel like the current creative team that took over for them really is built upon what Francis and Brian established. So, yeah, certainly definitely worth your time to go and check it out. All that stuff's in trade, so you can get it relatively cheaply. And one thing that that I know Francis talked about at San Diego Comic-Con a few years ago that he and Brian strived to do was to incorporate a lot of the dialogue and the like lettering, especially on the title page and the credits and such, into the art itself, much like Will Eisner used to do in his Spirit comics. So those title pages, just about every title page in that run of Flash from Manapole and Buccioletto is no pun intended, but a real work of art.
Yeah, it really reminds me of like old school type comics.
Yeah, it's classic stuff for sure. So I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Comic Source Podcast. Don't forget, if you want to check out our episodes, be sure and subscribe to us on iTunes. And you can go to our website, thecomicsourceblog.com. You can find all the episodes there on our podcast page. You can also find episodes of our Top Cow Chronology Project podcast. My YouTube channel, I haven't put up a video in a while, but I'm hoping to rectify that soon. Unfortunately, as you may or may not know, I lost all my pictures from San Diego Comic-Con this year. So I am still working on hopefully retrieving those. But if you want to reach out to us, there's multiple ways. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search on Facebook for The Comic Source. That's us. As I said, you can go to our website. There's a Contact Us page there. You can email us directly at thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. So if you have any questions, there's a book you want us to take a look at or review, if you have questions to send in for a quiz, don't hesitate, reach out, let us know how we're doing. I believe the next convention I'm going to be at is going to be the Long Beach Comic Con with my co-host from the Top Cow Chronology Project, Manny. That's coming up in September, so we'll certainly keep you updated about that. And once again, I just want to say that the interviews that we did at San Diego this year are really good, and they're definitely worth listening to. So do yourself a favor. Do me a favor. Go and check them out. Share them on your social media. Share them with your friends that read comics. Put them up on your Facebook. We really appreciate the support.
Yes, thanks.